morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, July 14th, Bastille Day, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Alison Weir joins us from the Viva Palestina convoy in Cairo as they prepare to enter Gaza.
The greenwash revealed. Kate McMahon with Friends of the Earth joins us in the great debunking of ethanol.
And why the big rush to pass a bad bill? Obama's health care is the headache that won't go away.
Portland area weather, cloudy early, then clearing with a high around 80. Tonight clear, low around 56. And then tomorrow sunny and warmer, near 87.
And today we're not exactly going to regional news around Cascadia. We are going to be speaking with Alison Weir with Viva Palestina, the convoy which is attempting today to cross into Gaza. The convoy right now, including Cynthia McKinney, Alison Weir, and a number of other people, Galloway too, are waiting to see whether they'll be able to, in fact, get into Gaza. Good morning, Alison. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us what the situation is there where you are.
Sure. I'm in Cairo. It's 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. here. I don't know if you can hear in the background. It's dusk, so there's the prayer call going on. We are here. There are over 170 Americans. We're with Viva Palestina, waiting here with our bags packed, our backpacks, et cetera, to get permission from the Egyptian government, which I'm sure, as your listeners know, takes its marching orders from the U.S. and mostly from Israel. So we're waiting to get the permission to take humanitarian supplies into Gaza. We have dozens of wheelchairs, walkers. We have over $250,000 worth of medicines. We have refrigerators, a few refrigerators and blankets, and all this humanitarian aid that the suffocating siege of Gaza has prevented from getting to the 1.4 million people in Gaza. So we as Americans feel obligated to try to get this to the people there. But we're here sitting in Cairo waiting, trying to get permission to take that. We also have two ambulances to take all of this into Gaza. Yesterday, one group tried to make it part of the way to Al-Arish, which is the border with Rafah, with Gaza, and were stopped by Egyptian forces at the Suez, right before you enter the Sinai, and was prevented from going further. There was a 12-hour standoff. It was very dramatic. I was not there, but I have someone with me. When you're ready to hear the details, she can give you the personal details about what went on with that standoff. Right now, we don't know if we'll be leaving any minute to start the drive to Al-Arish and hopefully into Gaza, or whether this will be hours from now.
Thank you so much for that, Alison. We're going to be speaking with you and others with the convoy throughout the morning and throughout the rest of the day. We'll probably want to incorporate your report in with the rest of our news programming all day today, and I thank you very, very much for that. I know that I and all our listeners and Liam and everyone at KBOO sends their thoughts with you. Thanks so much for that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Once again, staying one step ahead of the EPA, Oregon is cutting its own program to track pesticide use. On a brighter note, this could produce similar effects to the green pool to those seen in the case of the ATVs. The state of Oregon absorbed 19 million pounds of pesticides in 2008. More than 500 different active ingredients were used, the vast majority in agriculture. A survey of pesticide use by homeowners was also included in the report. It showed that some homeowners are moving toward alternatives to pesticides. The second most common pesticide on the list was glyphosate, known under the trade name Roundup. Research has found that one of its inert ingredients can kill human cells, particularly embryonic, placental, and umbilical cord cells. That's not very inert.
Neither are ATVs, and they've also been doing a spectacular job of cleaning up the gene pool. So there is something to be said as the mighty wheels of technology roll forward, usually over our own feet. The EPA is planning ahead for pollution. Yes, hard rock mining companies could face new federal rules to set aside money to clean up pollution. Apparently, the EPA doesn't care if the mining companies pollute as long as they're prepared to pay the associated fines. This after groups including the Sierra Club and Idaho Conservation League sued in U.S. District Court. They contend that the EPA's failure to develop financial assurance requirements in accordance with the three-decade-old provisions of the Superfund cleanup law was exposing the environment to unremediated releases of hazardous substances. No, it wasn't. The hazardous substances are still going out into the environment. It's just that the polluters now are supposed to have a special fund that they could draw on to pay the fines.
That's how capitalism works. Pollution makes money. Ron's oil company in Coquille is appealing a $14,000 fine slapped on it by the state DEQ. The oil distributor on the southern Oregon coast failed to report leaks from underground storage tanks in a timely manner. Now, if the EPA had had anything to say in the matter, Ron would have plenty of money set aside for that fine.
Oh, Ron, what were you thinking? Recently on Air Cascadia, we've been looking through the green screen surrounding biomass and other dubious techno solutions to our energy needs. But long before biomass, there was ethanol, America's gift to agribusiness. My guest this morning is Kate McMahon, energy and transportation policy campaigner with Friends of the Earth. Good morning, Kate. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Welcome to the debunking session. Okay, ethanol, talk about it a little bit. What is it? It's E15, I believe. There's a number of different classes of ethanol, and, of course, all of it is a giveaway to agribusiness, notably corn.
Yeah, so E15 is essentially a 15% blend of ethanol. Currently, biofuel proponents are trying to kind of lift this cap on how much ethanol can be blended into gasoline. That cap's currently at about 10%. The thing is that different blends of ethanol can have all sorts of different types of air pollution and air quality issues associated with it. It changes, with each percent blend, so a 10% blend versus a 12% blend versus a 15% blend could have all sorts of different types of air pollution with it. Presently, EPA has been petitioned by a group called Growth Energy in order to lift this cap, irrelevant of the human health impacts that it could have. It's really not a great situation. There's other sorts of impacts outside of just the human health and environmental impacts, such as effects on small engines or even, car engines as well. There's a whole slew of different people that are not excited about this petition, including, environmental organizations, but also manufacturers of, marine vessels, for example, as well as, the big food industries in addition to that. So that's the deal with the E15 situation. Another thing out there that's happening that's kind of a big deal is the what's going on with the different sustainability standards for the biofuels policies. And I'm not sure if you're interested in that issue as well. But just to say a little bit, there's some really critical provisions in the biofuels policies right now that require a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions for any new biofuels being used to fulfill the biofuels mandate. As you probably are aware, EPA's recent analysis showed that biofuels that we're producing today are actually worse for global warming than gasoline.
But they're good for business, of course.
They're very good for business. So what's essentially happened is that corporate agribusiness has been very successful at lobbying. And as we saw in the recently passed climate bill in the House of Representatives, corporate agribusiness and their buddies in Congress essentially threatened to hold the whole climate bill process hostage if these critical safeguards for environmental protection from biofuels were not removed.
And look at the kind of bill we ended up with anyway. And
exactly.
Thank you so much for that, Kate. That's all the time we've got time for today. But we will be continuing to follow the debunking of the greenwash
sure.
that has been going on. It's a constant drumbeat in mass media these days. So thank you so much for that. My guest has been Kate McMahon, Energy and Transportation Policy Campaigner with Friends of the Earth. Thanks so much for that, Kate.
A federal judge in San Francisco tomorrow will hear arguments in a case brought by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, challenging Justice Department, or rather challenging the dragnet that the government surveillance of millions of ordinary Americans. The Justice Department moved to dismiss the case in April, state secrets, you know. At tomorrow's hearing, EFF will argue that the lawsuit cannot be dismissed on the government's blanket security assertion, and that the government is not immune from suit for violating federal wiretapping laws.
It's always state secrets.
Yeah.
In the midst of the Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearings and a plethora of other pressing issues, President Obama wants to fast-track the health care overhaul, whatever that means. But why the big hurry? And why is it necessary to include abortion? And what role actually are the lobbyists playing? Independent journalist David Rosenfeld with the LundReport.org is with us this morning to look a little deeper down the rabbit hole. Good morning, David. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Chris. Thanks.
Well, this is a little strange, isn't it? Why are we in such a big hurry to pass an extremely flawed, but looks to me to be extremely flawed legislation, and then throw abortion in as really a wrench in the works? What do you suppose the strategy is here?
Well, I think they're trying to move quickly because the longer that the debate goes on, the longer the industry has a chance to influence what's going on in Congress. We saw yesterday during a committee hearing for the Senate Committee on Labor and Pensions, which our Senator Jeff Merkley sits on, that Republicans really turned the issue into an abortion debate. And it's really quite revealing that this is at least their latest strategy to kind of derail this this whole effort, which is to try and say that Democrats want to pass a plan that would cover abortion. And I don't really know that many people have made that a cornerstone of health care reform, but clearly this is being used as a wedge issue like many others that Republicans and conservatives use to slow progress in our country.
Well, it's the same thing as, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater. All you have to do, if you want to so energize the Republican base, is to yell abortion, and everybody, whatever that word is associated with, doesn't like whatever else. Like, abortion could be the name of a racehorse running in the Derby.
Right.
And it wouldn't matter. You yell that word, and all of them are on their feet screaming. So in the midst of the confirmation hearings and so forth, how do you see the healthcare debate evolving, say, just over the short term this week?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I sort of feel optimistic and then one day and then really down the next. We heard last week a report that the industry is spending $1.4 million per day to lobby against health care reform, and they've hired over 300 former congressional staffers and even some lawmakers, including Richard Gephardt, who is the Speaker of the House for many years, a Democrat. It's quite clear that sides are being taken. I still have a lot of optimism that we're going to have a really strong plan, and that what Obama and what this this Senate Committee on Labor, the Ted Kennedy Committee, is putting forward will be the plan, and I think we're going to be left with quite a lot of reforms.
Well, you and Paul Krugman, you both believe the same thing. I have my doubts. Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with independent journalist David Rosenfeld with the LundReport.org. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you.
So far, Sonia Sotomayor has fielded questions from Senators Patrick Leahy, Herb Kohl, Jeff Sessions, and Orrin Hatch. Here's a quick review of what's been asked so far and what's likely to come later from the 19 members of the Judiciary Committee. The games begin.
The Bastille Day March has been held under heightened security since an attempted attack on President Jacques Chirac in 2002. It is held each year, of course, today, July 14th, the anniversary of the storming of the Bastille prison in Paris by revolutionaries in 1789, the symbolic starting point of the movement that led to the First French Republic. Bastille Day has also become an occasion for disaffected young people from the bleak suburban horror housing projects. it's an opportunity for them to express their frustration with high unemployment rates and what they see as France's failure to integrate ethnic minorities. They burned last night some more than 300 vehicles and wounded 13 police officers across the country on the eve of the national holiday.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, July 14th, Bastille Day, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillian Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen Stevenson, who's on sabbatical. And I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Stay tuned for Flashpoints. Two activists were assassinated in Honduras over the weekend. Dennis Bernstein will have continuing coverage of the military coup and analysis from Al Giordano, founder of Narco News, and writer Eva Golinger from Caracas.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.